You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards. Defenders Live is brought to you as a production of The Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, and we come to you live every Monday from 12 to 12:30. You can learn more at defendersfje.org and defendersfje.blogspot.com. In addition, you can follow or listen to past shows of Defenders Live by going to defendersliveradio.blogspot.com. So, welcome to the show for this week, and welcome to our quarterly guest, Phil Woleto, editor of the Virginia Defender newspaper, who we always have on when the paper is published. Welcome, Phil.
Hello, Anna.
Glad to have you back.
Glad to be back.
All righty. This is when we give you a sort of a cover of the headlines from the current issue and use it as an opportunity or a springboard to talk about things that are happening in the community. Phil, what would you like to start with today?
Well, the paper came out on Thursday, and we're in the process of distributing it around the city. Saturday, you, Kwame Binta, and Kiamba Wilkerson, and myself drove to Virginia Beach and had a meeting with a dozen folks who distribute the newspaper in the Hampton Roads area, and about half of them are involved in the Occupy movement, and four of them were family members or friends of Jermaine Doss, a Virginia prisoner who is incarcerated in Suffolk 2 state prison, doing 130 years. 130?
I think it's 138.
138 years for a crime that we think he did not do. And we're going to be writing about this in the future and trying to get a little movement going together to get his case reexamined. Speaking of cases, the front page story in this issue, this summer issue of the Virginia Defender, Community Action Wins a Victory for Ashley Williams. This is a case that the Virginia State Conference, NAACP, former City Councilman Saad Al-Amin, present City Councilman Marty Jewell, longtime Richmond Black activists Bernice Travers and Roxy Allison, and the Defenders have been working on, along with other organizations. Ms. Williams was charged with second-degree homicide after her two-year-old son, Deshaun, died back in 2009. She was charged with felony child neglect. Basically, she was accused of allowing Deshaun to starve to death. When he died, he was severely underweight, 14 pounds. There was a whole series of things that happened to Ms. Williams that raised serious questions about the criminal justice system in the city of Richmond, as well as the Medicaid health program and the city's Department of Social Services. Through a long series of mobilizations for court cases and press conferences and press releases and newspaper stories, media work, Ms. Williams has been allowed to retract her guilty plea that she had pleaded guilty to involuntary manslaughter under what we consider to be undue pressure from the prosecution and her court-appointed attorney. One of her court-appointed attorneys. And on August 6th, a date will be set for her next court hearing, which may be her trial. We're not sure exactly how it will proceed. But one of her other court-appointed attorneys, Pauline Ewald, had lined up three expert witnesses, one of whom is at the top of the professional pyramid for forensic pathologists, Dr. Cyril Wecht from Pittsburgh.
And he's someone who donates his expertise on certain cases.
Including this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was one of the odd things that happened. Pauline Ewalt was accused by the court of improperly offering to compensate Dr. Wecht for his testimony. She has an affidavit from Dr. Wecht that nothing of the sort happened. One of the many things that raises questions about how this case has been handled. Basically, we feel that the way that Ms. Williams was treated by the court system and by the social services and public defenders became such an embarrassment to the city that they wanted her swept into the prison system as quickly as possible, and possibly broke their own rules and regulations and possibly committed criminal acts. We're pushing for a investigation of this whole process to make sure that nothing like this ever happens again. So it was a tremendous victory to force the court system to allow her to take back her guilty plea. She was on her way to prison at that point.
When everyone stepped in, she was literally, the conviction was already in and she was going for sentencing.
Mm-hmm.
So it is fairly miraculous, I think, for people who are not terribly close to the criminal justice system or the court system and only follow events like this through the newspapers or through the media to grasp that you can, that the system is as either flexible or as arbitrary as the judgment of the courtroom as to what can happen to you at what step in the process. It's a little, that part of it's a little unnerving and to understand that there is a lot that can be done just for the good as well as not to the good.
Yeah, and obviously the other lesson is that you can win.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that made a critical difference in this case was packing the court hearing on, I believe it was four separate occasions, so much so that the correctional officers assigned to security in the courtroom at the John Marshall Courts Building had to bring in extra chairs and were commenting on how unusual it was to have such a turnout. For folks who listen to this program and think, you know, it can be discouraging in this period, sometimes it's very hard to see any improvement in situations, we want you to know that this is an example of a struggle that can be won by mobilizing. The people used to say, you can't beat VCU, don't even try fighting them, and there's now a lovely memorial park on the spot where VCU used to operate a commercial parking lot. You can win. But you can't win by sitting back home and not getting involved.
Right.
Right.
No, it's the voice. It's it's the old adage of the squeaky wheel. Which of course makes you think of whistleblowers. But the truth is that if you speak out, you can make an impact. You can win.
You can.
You can. Yeah.
So other things that are going on.
Yeah.
Speaking of winning, I mean, there's a lot of individual articles that we'd really want to alert people to. There's an editorial on conditions in the Richmond City Jail. There's coverage of the support campaign for the hunger strikers at Red Onion State Prison, the so-called Supermax. There's a op-ed piece by Salim Kofani of the NAACP on the Richmond Juvenile Detention Center closing. Continual accusations of mismanagement and cover-ups on the part of the city. There's a wonderful analysis of recent developments in the Republic of Mali in West Africa by Anna Edwards. Very little.
I don't know if wonderful is the word I would use, but
incisive. Well, the defenders put out a piece on April 4th. That was one of the first analyses to come out on the coup and northern rebellion going on in Mali,
mm-hmm.
and particularly cautioning people about U.S. and Western intervention in that crisis. And that received quite a bit of a response, and you were interviewed by the Final Call newspaper published by the Nation of Islam, and by the Black Agenda Report editor, Glenn Ford,
mm-hmm.
and also by Pacifica Radio Station in Los Angeles. And all of them said that it was the most incisive piece that they had read on the crisis. So this is an update on that analysis. The U.S. is exploiting this situation in order to increase its military presence in Western Africa, something that is doing all across the continent and needs to be taken up in a much more forceful way, not only by the anti-war movement, but by the population as a whole, particularly the black community.
Yeah, the situation, of course, becomes all the more, probably for some people perplexing, but also painful when you realize that the internal dynamics are one component, and then there is, what the outside forces have in mind and the various either agendas that might be simply economic, but then there are also those that are military and the excuses that are being used. But what's happening on the ground in Mali is very real. You know, you've got several factions in the north, the Tuaregs, MNLA, which is the Movement for the National Liberation of Azawad, which is the territory that that they wanted to claim for an independent state. But because of the way that in some recent articles it's been described as the hijacking of the rebellion by the Ansar Dine group, who has been reported most recently in terms of really attracting sort of worldwide attention because there has been the destruction of shrines in Timbuktu, which is in itself recognized as a cultural treasure of the world, that some of those shrines have been destroyed, and there's great concern for that, but also for for the abuse of the people that's going on. But essentially, the MNLA has now said that they never really had an alliance with this group, and that they are actually seeking assistance pushing Ansar Dine out. And that's just in the north. And the crisis in the south is the overthrow of the former democratically elected government, the former president Amadou Toumani Touré, and the institution of the negotiated transitional government, through mediation with ECOWAS, which is the West African sort of economic group that came together to try to act as mediators in this crisis. There's just an awful lot of players with an awful lot of spoons in the same bowl without a clear way forward. And that one of the sets of voices that we would most like to hear from is that of the civilian class or the working class. The people of Mali is really what we're hoping, I think, to hear stronger and stronger voices from. And in some of the reports, a little bit more, I'm beginning to pick up that there is some more resistance from people not affiliated with the coup, not affiliated with the central government or the army, not affiliated with the MNLA or Ansar Dine, but people living in these communities who are beginning to push back and really want to unify and take control of their country once again. And our concern of being here in the U.S. is that we keep an eye and be as vocal as possible about the U.S. staying out of it. And of course, the concern is that AFRICOM, the African command of the U.S. military, is actively involved in Africa. It's got more than 2,000 operations. That there are possibly 11 bases from which they are doing various operations. But they have still not been able to move their headquarters from Stuttgart, Germany, onto the African continent, which is something. So we will keep following this and try to bring you what we know and some our perspective on this as it goes forward. That was the cue to let you know that you're listening to Defenders Live here on WRIR. It's 97.3 LPFM. It's Richmond's radio for the rest of us. You can listen live on WRIR.org on Mondays, right now, 12 to 12:30, and it's repeated online only on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. And of course, you can listen on your radio dial. My guest today again is Phil Woleto. He's the editor of the Virginia Defender newspaper, and it is out again. This is the summer issue, And we are covering some of the headline stories that make up this particular issue of The Defender. You can, of course, see it online. It's posted online at defendersfje.org.
Will be posted.
And this particular one will be posted later today. So stay tuned for that. You know, in talking about Mali, it's also that we're talking about the global dynamic. You know, our role in the global struggle for human rights, for justice, and for people to be able to exercise their own right to determine the way that they want to live. In the U.S., of course, we've got elections coming up. We've got the presidential election underway. We've got local elections and state-level elections underway. And I think we have a couple of things that relate to that.
Well, the Richmond Crusade for Voters, the organization started in 1956 to increase voter participation by Richmond's black community, traditionally looks at the platforms and records and promises of the various local candidates as election time approaches. And they have a candidate committee that's headed by community activist Carrie Cox, which is examining the various candidates for city council, the school board, and the local representatives in higher office. And so Ms. Cox generously agreed to write a story about the work of that committee, which I happen to be a member of. And it gives a rundown on the work that they're doing, who's involved, and when the recommendations will come from this committee to the membership of the Richmond Crusade for Voters. And those recommendations will be publicized in October. So that's a good development, trying to keep an eye on these folks that are running for office. Speaking of which, we have a major op-ed piece that we'd really like to encourage people to read by Ajamu Baraka, who is a nationally and internationally known human rights activist, founder of the U.S. Human Rights Network. Formerly based in Atlanta, Georgia, he recently resigned that position in order to take a position with the Institute for, let me read that so I get it right, the Institute for Policy Studies, where he is editing a book on human rights titled The Fight Must Be for Human Rights, Voices from the Front Line, to be published in 2013. Ajamu Baraka has recently relocated to Charlottesville and is involved in the organizing efforts for the 2013 Virginia People's Assembly. And he's done an op-ed piece called Obama and Me, an African-American Activist's Search for Clarity. And the point that he raises is that it's asking the question why the black community across the country is not negotiating with President Obama for its vote. It is not asking for anything in return for its support in the upcoming presidential election. Now, of course, if the black community did not support Barack Obama for president, he would not be the next president. So they are in a airtight situation where they can begin to make some requests or demands on the present administration, and yet that is not happening. It appears to be that the Obama administration considers the black vote to be sewn up, and it doesn't have to worry about it. It is making gestures to other community, other voting blocs. More undocumented workers have been deported under the Obama administration than under any other single U.S. president. However, President Obama recently made some concessions on the issue of the children of immigrants, people who were born here in the United States and are attempting to go to college or mm-hmm. You know, have made their lives here.
It's a modified Dream Act.
Right.
Right.
That's right. To allow them to stay in this country and to pursue their dreams. And that was an obvious attempt to curry some favor from the Latino voters. Long after the worst part of the struggle to win recognition for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender rights had been fought, President Obama came out in support of gay marriage.
Personally. Right.
He didn't do anything to push it, but he came out for it, and that immediately resulted in a great influx of donations, financial donations to his campaign from the gay community. But in terms of the black community, the basic demands that had been raised early on in the Obama administration, the Congressional Black Caucus asking for a jobs program directed towards black youth, and President Obama's response was, I'm not going to do anything specifically directed towards black unemployment. We see how the U.S. military is increasing its reach and its operations throughout the continent of Africa. There has been no attempt to turn back the incredible social, political crisis of mass incarceration, the war on drugs. It appears to be that the Democratic Party, of which President Obama is the titular head, but let's face it, money talks, and the Democratic Party is run by powerful forces, just as the Republican Party is, Wall Street firms, Goldman Sachs, and so on, who feel there's no need to make any concessions to the black community because they're going to vote for Barack Obama no matter what. And that's an awful situation to be in, where you're in a position to decide a presidential election and not be negotiating for anything in return for your vote.
Even that he adequately represent that constituency.
No, his main attribute at this point, he's not a Republican.
Which some people will say, you know, is the inch that makes the difference.
I don't go along with this idea that there's no difference between the Democrats and Republicans. There's no difference between a Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. There are on a number of things. But in terms of the economy and whether or not people are going to get jobs, and in terms of war, there's no difference.
Right.
Because those two things deal with the fundamental survival of capitalism. On the social issues, on the women's right to choose, on gay rights, on a range of other things, and just in terms of being, you know, Obama may ignore the black community, but Romney looks like he wants to run over it with a Panzer tank. So there is a difference. But when you're talking about the fundamental functioning of the economic system called capitalism, Goldman Sachs was the largest single financial backer for Barack Obama as he ran for president the first time. And when he got into office, he bailed out Wall Street and did not bail out the communities. And that is because that's why he was put into office. He may be the greatest person personally in the world, and was certainly much happier seeing he and Michelle and the girls in the White House than the other alternatives. But it's not opening up any shuttered factories. It's not preventing kids from going into the criminal justice system. It's not providing any kind of a future for our youth, and it's not stopping these terrible wars overseas.
And the poverty rate is going up.
And the poverty rate, according to this latest report that just came out, and there's a story about it in today's daily newspaper, the poverty rate is reaching a point where close to one out of every five people live in poverty in this country. So we're hoping that this article will stimulate some discussion. We'll certainly be circulating it among the community organizations and civic groups and religious institutions that we're in touch with. And we're hoping that it can at least open up a dialogue that perhaps this is the time to raise some concerns with the Democratic Party and the Obama administration. Otherwise, there's no reason to think things will get any better in a second administration or anywhere further down the line. We are in an absolute, complete social, economic, political crisis, and it's time to formulate a program, policies, and move forward on that, irrespective of who is in the White House.
That's right. Yeah, the very idea that you're sort of held hostage by the fact that nobody has to think about you because you've already said you're going to give your vote regardless is That is disheartening, and that's in that other way, it's a waste of the privilege that people say that the right to vote is, and it's something that was so was fought to achieve.
Just like to remind folks that there are close to 300 distribution sites where you can pick up a copy of the Virginia Defender, all branches of the Richmond Public Library, and we just dropped off 800 copies at the main branch, and they distribute them to the local branches. If you cannot find a copy in your neighborhood, call us at 644-5834. 644-5834. 644-5834.
I think we'll have you back during Pledge Week.
and also, we need some help in getting the paper out. There's a couple of folks whose personal situations changed. We have a couple of routes that are open, and I'll be doing that unless we get some help, and that means they'll get out a little later than we want. So you can also call to volunteer to distribute the paper in your neighborhood.
That's right. Keep it close.
Yeah.
Well, Phil, I want to thank you for joining us again. I think this is a pretty dense and meaty issue, not to exclude the fact that it also acknowledges the fact that the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality is, in fact, 10 years old this year.
We forgot to mention that.
We did. So you can read a little bit more about that in the current issue.
Including
as
two
well.
Pages of solidarity statements from throughout the country and overseas.
That's right.
Including from the Tehran Peace Museum in Tehran, Iran.
Very good. All right. Well, I look forward to having you back again with the next issue of the paper, unless something comes up in between. And I want to thank my listeners for tuning in. And don't forget, you can check it out online. Give it one day and go to defendersfje.org if you also can't get your hands on a paper copy or prefer the electronic version. So stay tuned next week for the Defenders Live and more about what's happening in our community. Thanks for tuning in. Keep up the struggle, and remember that kindness does matter. Thanks.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.